Welcome to the OTP, presented by Farm Bureau Health Plans. Look to the folks at Farm Bureau Health Plans when you need someone who understands the X's and O's of healthcare coverage. They've been protecting Tennesseans since 1947. I'm Mike Keith, and I want to thank Amy Wells for allowing me to do this because it gives me a chance to do two things. First, share some great stories, largely from Coach Dave McGinnis. And second, to talk about an organization that has made and is making a difference in this world. I'm talking about the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society, better known as LLS. The mission of LLS is to cure leukemia, lymphoma, Hodgkin's disease, and myeloma, and improve the quality of life of patients and their families. LLS exists to find cures and ensure access to treatments for blood cancer patients. That's a quote. But taking it further, what I've seen is even deeper, and that is, it's working. I lost a friend to leukemia in 1974 when we were both in first grade. Today, with progress that has been made in the field, he would have beaten it. Those are the advances that LLS has helped to make possible. We've won battles against blood cancer. Now it's time to win the war. LLS does various fundraising events around their annual Man Woman of the Year competition. And recently, they asked Coach Dave McGinnis and me to join my friend Mickey Ryan for sports stories. The LLS folks and Amy Wells have given me permission to share some of that audio for this OTP. As we begin, two things. First, if you'd be so kind to donate, go to bit.ly/LLS livestream. That's bit.ly/LLS livestream. And for the second part, here's how we get started. Our conversation begins with Dave McGinnis telling a story about getting hired by Mike Ditka and the Chicago Bears in 1986. My job? Simply to set up Coach Mac.
All right, let me set it up, Coach, and then I want you to take it. Okay, so Coach Mac was a star player at Texas Christian, TCU. And then he goes into college coaching. And you worked your way, take us through where you were. I know you were at Indiana State. Where were you first?
I started at TCU as a GA and then worked at the University of Missouri for 3 years. And then okay. I went to Indiana State and then back to TCU and then to Kansas State. Now pick it up.
All right. Mike. All right. So you're at Kansas State. You're the secondary coach?
Well, you know, I was kind of the quasi defensive coordinator.
Okay.
It wasn't like it is now in college staffs. We only had six guys on the staff. So I coached the inside and the outside linebackers.
Did you think you were close to being a college head coach at that point?
I had had some inquiries, Mike. I had some inquiries and it was, I didn't ever intend to be, but the way that I advanced myself in college football, to be, you know, God's honest truth here with everybody listening, and I'll always be honest with you, I was a really good recruiter. You know, I was a good recruiter and could get players to come. And you have to be a good recruiter to get players to come to Manhattan, Kansas. You know, and so I recruited everywhere. They put me on the road. You know, all of the universities did. And when they got there, I mean, they absolutely loved it. But anyway, so yes, I'd had some inquiries already.
All right, so you finished at 1985 at Kansas State. The Chicago Bears are on their way to winning Super Bowl 20, the famous Super Bowl Shuffle Bears, their only Super Bowl championship. The first part of 1986 comes around, and you hear from the Chicago Bears.
Yeah, well, I had been recruiting in Dallas. And in fact, I was recruiting in Dallas with Kevin Steele. You know, Kevin Steele at the time was working at Oklahoma State, who's now Kevin's now the defensive coordinator at Auburn. So we're very good friends. And I was recruiting down there. And one night, you know, we were setting up some places that we were getting ready to go. We had different schools that we were going to, and the phone rings. And it's Vince Tobin. Well, Vince Tobin, I had worked with at the University of Missouri, and he had left Missouri as a defensive coordinator, had gone to the BC Lions in Canada, and then had worked as a defensive coordinator for three seasons in the USFL for Jim Mora. Well, Jim Mora had just gotten the head job at New Orleans after, you know, the Philadelphia / Baltimore Stars had won the USFL championship. And so Vince Tobin was going down there as the defensive coordinator to New Orleans he was going to go down there and work in New Orleans. So when the phone rang and it was Vince Tobin, Vic Fangio was on Vince Tobin's staff then. You know, a lot of guys that have coached in the league for a long time. I mean, that staff with Jim Mora put out a lot of coaches. But anyway, the phone rings and it's Vince Tobin. He said, what are you doing? And I said, well, I'm in Dallas recruiting. I said, what are you doing? He said, look, how would you like to interview for a job with the Bears? Well, now think of this, what I just told you. He's supposed to be in New Orleans because he's accepted the job to go to the New Orleans Saints. And I said, Baylor? I said, I've got a better job than Baylor right here. I said, why would I want to interview at Baylor? He said, no, the Chicago Bears. And I mean, I said, what are you talking about? He said, I'll explain it to you. When's the earliest you can get on an airplane? I said, about 2 hours ago. And so, you know, I flew up to O'Hare and they picked me up. And the next thing I know, I'm sitting in Mike Ditka's office. He had a linebacker job open. Buddy Ryan had left. He and Jeff Fisher had left to go to the Philadelphia Eagles after they had won the Super Bowl. And so Buddy Ryan, when he was there, he had been the defensive coordinator and the linebacker coach. They only had six coaches on the staff. All right. And so,
wow.
And so, yeah, exactly. Wow. And so then Mike Ditka had hired Vince Tobin to replace Buddy Ryan because he loved the things that he did with Jim Mora. You know, Vince Tobin was very innovative. If any of our listeners will remember the late, great Jim Johnson, you know, the defensive coordinator for a long time there at the Eagles, he got most of his stuff from Vince Tobin. And Vic Fangio was on that staff, so he's got a pretty good defensive tree. But anyway, Mike Ditka hires him, and I didn't know any of this. I mean, I'm down in Dallas trying to recruit for the Kansas State Wildcats. And so, you know, he brings me in. He's bringing five guys into the interview, and I'm the only one that doesn't have any experience, you know, in the NFL. And so I figured, well, this will be great experience at least to interview with Mike Ditka and the world champion Chicago Bears. And so, you know, I go in there and not being smart enough, you know, to be scared, you know, I go in and sit down with Ditka and he starts to interview me and he says, just tell me, kid, why do you want this job? And I said, well, I mean, it's right now it's the greatest team, you know, in the world. I said, you're the world's champion. And I said, I said, I'm not saying that I'm going to bring anything just magnificent as far as scheme wise, but I'm willing to learn anything. But I just want to thank you, coach, for the opportunity to be here. So we talked football a little bit, talked philosophy. And I just, you know, was talking like I always do. You know, I was just talking with him, visiting with him. He said, look, why don't you go back and spend the night with, you know, spend the night here because, you know, it's late. And then, you know, I'll talk to Coach Tobin and then, you know, we've got some other guys here and we'll make a decision. And I thought, great. I mean, I just love the chance to interview with him. Well, the next day after breakfast, you know, we come back to Vince Tobin's office and Mike Ditka's secretary comes to the door. I think that she's bringing me my return flight, you know, so that I can get out of there because, you know, I've interviewed and I thought, you know, this was fun. And she said, Coach Ditka would like to see you. And I went, okay. And so I go in there and shut the door. And he said, kid, you want this job? And I said, yes, sir. He said, it's yours. Remember this. You're the coach. They're the players. I'll always have your back. Now go to work. That's it.
What does that job pay at that point? If you don't mind me asking.
$55,000 a year. Wow. $55,000 a year. I was making $50,000 a year at Kansas State. I was one of the higher paid assistant coaches there in the Big Eight there at the time. You know, I was making $50,000 a year there at Kansas State. And he said, how's $55,000 sound? I said, perfect. You know, I mean, that's exactly what I wanted. That's exactly what I wanted, coach. You know, that's exactly what I wanted. And then he said, okay, so, you know, you guys need to put your playbook and stuff together. And then he said, oh, by the way, we're getting ready to have, you know, after the draft, we're going to have the Super Bowl ring ceremony. And I want you to be there. And I said, well, thank you, coach. I'd love to be there. You know, I didn't have anything to do with that Super Bowl team, but I'd love to be there. And he said, I want you to hand the rings out to the linebackers. And I went, okay, I'll do that too. That was the beginning of a Camelot experience. Mike Ditka was one of the best human beings in the world. I mean, the persona that people see out there, he had the biggest heart and still does. He did so many things for so many people, but there was a side to Mike Ditka that you didn't want to get on the other side of Mike Ditka. I promise you that. I'll give you another story, because at 86, we go 14-2, break the records defensively that the 85 Bears had. You know, those players were marvelous. You know, I'll go over it. You know, in my coaching career, just think about this. In my coaching career, I've coached and been involved with 8 NFL Hall of Famers now in my NFL coaching career, 8 of them. 5 of them were off of that Bears team. 5 of them were off of that Bears team, all right? And the other, you know, and the other 3, you know, were Aeneas Williams and, of course, Kevin Mawai and Emmett Smith, all right? But the five were on that Bears team. And the thing that is so important about that to know is that the whole time we were up there, you never even realized, you know how you never realize how great something really is when you're involved in it? And then the older you get, when you step back and you look at it, you say, wow. Anyway, we go 14-2, get beat by Washington in the first round of the playoffs, which was, it was devastating. You know, Ron Rivera, who was one of my linebackers, coached for me, you know, was playing, and Ron never likes for me to tell this story, but he missed a tackle on Darryl Green on a punt return that went for a touchdown. It didn't cause us to get beat, but it was one of, you know, Washington that was having a hard time scoring on that defense. Anyway, so we're getting ready the next year, and the Bears team's even going to be better. And we start off 4-0 in 1987, and then the strike hits. Then we have a strike. The strike hits, and so now everybody's out. That great Bears team that started off 4-0, we're out. We're on strike. And so as coaches, you know, this is my second year in the league. My first year in the league, Mickey, and for everybody watching, I thought, what's so hard about the National Football League? I mean, we're the number one defense in the league. We're 14-2. I mean, I'm really a great coach. And that offseason, look, I came in there knowing zero, squat. If everybody closes their eyes and tell me what they see, that's how much NFL football I knew going in there. After that season, I'm lecturing all over the country on linebacker play. Like, I'm some young guru now, okay? And it's all because of the players that I had and that we had on that team. So anyway, now we're wondering, well, now the league decides they're going to bring in replacement players and they're going to play games that are going to count on your record, all right? So we go through the process now of putting together the Spare Bears, all right? So we start with the Spare Bears, and with the Spare Bears, because I had just come from college and had known a lot of these kids, you know, because I'd recruited a lot of them. You know, so I'm involved in trying to get some Spare Bears in there. You know, Bill Tobin's in charge of our personnel. So we do a great job of bringing some players in that might be able to do us some good. Okay, long story short, we got 3 games to play. We go 2-1. And so they've done a great job of maintaining the lead, you know, in the NFC, you know, for our division then at the time, done a great job. All right. The last game we play against New Orleans. They have a bunch of guys cross the line. They crossed the strike line. We had a quarterback named Mike Hohensey that was a smart dude, because he figured out when he saw how many New Orleans defenders had crossed the line, he all of a sudden developed a knee problem. The day of the game. Okay. And so our quarterback that played that game for us was Sean Payton. You know, Sean Payton played quarterback for us, you know, that day. All right. And so anyway, we get through with that. And the strike, now the strike's over. Now the players are coming back. There's a lot of hard feelings around the league. There's certainly hard feelings there, you know, with the Bears in Chicago, because the Bears were the team. You know, and Mike had asked him, look, if you guys will just, you know, say you're coming back in, the rest of the league will follow you. Well, you know, they didn't do that. So anyway, we have a team meeting, big team meeting. Dickon gets up there and says, look, all right, no hard feelings. Everything's behind us, but there's something I want you guys to do. We've got about 4 players that played for us on these replacement teams that I think can help us going forward. But in good faith, I want you guys to vote on it. And I want you guys to vote whether these four players can stay with us this year. I'm going to leave the room. The coaches are going to leave the room. All right, Dan Hampton, you and Mike Singletary, come get us when you're done. And so we go, the coaches, we go out. We're in the old Hallis Hall. The meetings rooms are in the basement. The coaches' offices are upstairs. About 20 minutes later, you know, Mike Singletary comes up, says, "Coach, we're ready." So all of us, all the coaches come down. We've only got seven coaches on the staff, okay? Seven assistant coaches and Mike Ditka. So we come down and we all sit down. The room's real quiet. Mike gets up. He's got a big wooden podium that he's standing on. He says, "All right, what's the verdict?" And so Mike Singletary stands up and says, "Coach, we voted and we all vote no." And so Ditka goes, "Okay, you vote no. Is that right, Dan? You know, Dan Hampton? Is that right, Mongo, Steve McMichael? Is that right? You know, Jim McMahon? Is that right, Walter? No?" Everybody nods their head no. He says, "Okay, I understand. That's good," he said. And then as loud as he could, "Well, I vote yes." He slams that podium, cracks the wooden podium, and says, "Go meet with your coaches. Meeting over."
Coach Mack.
I got one question. Coach Mack, tell again what Mike Ditka used to call you in 1986.
Kid.
In 2020, what does Mike Ditka call you?
Kid.
Thank you.
The kid,
because
Coach
I'm
Mack.
I'm going to tell you why. And I didn't know, because, but, you know, I'm very close to that Bears organization, the McCaskey family. I've got great respect for. And I asked one time, I asked somebody that had been there a long time with the Bears, you know, and I said, "Why does Coach call me Kid?" He said, "That's what George Hallis used to call him."
Nice.
You know, and so most of the young, I mean, look, Mike Ditka, I owe so much to Mike Ditka. He and his wife, Diana, were so good to me. I mean, it launched my career. But I can tell Mike Ditka stories forever and ever and ever. And I will always be indebted to Mike Ditka, Vince Tobin, and the Chicago Bears for everything good that's happened to Coach Mack in his coaching career.
That was a great story, but there were a lot more. Let's go to somebody that Dave McGinnis and I have in common in our careers. Very important to both of us. I'm talking about Jeff Fisher. I worked with Jeff for my first 13 years with the Titans from 1998 through 2010. He was incredibly good to me. Coach Mack spent 8 years with Jeff here in Nashville, and then they were together for Jeff Fisher's entire tenure with the Rams. Between the two of us, Coach Mack and I could do several hours of Jeff Fisher stories, but we settled on just a few, all of them humorous in nature. We started with one that was actually requested, a story about Jeff Fisher and a coin flip that got everyone's attention.
Well, the one that I know about is the one that Coach Mack and he were involved in when they were, I guess you were still in St. Louis at this point?
Yes.
And you were playing against Washington, and you had traded the number two pick in the draft to Washington so they could select RG3, Robert Griffin III.
Yes.
And you got four or five high selections.
Okay. Six.
Okay. Six picks in that. And of course, RG3 is still in the league. He's in Baltimore, ironically, and guy's a pro. I mean, he's done well. He's still in the NFL. He did not turn out to be Washington's savior like they hoped he would be, and Washington sort of took some grief after the fact for making this big trade. And Coach Fisher, who loves a good prank, loves a good ruse, loves to kind of tweak, kind of picked it up from there, didn't he, Coach?
Yeah, it was at Washington, which is a key element to this story. Oh, it was gosh. At Washington. And so before the ball game, you know, of course, I've been with Jeff Fisher for a long, long time. And ever since I've been with him, I've been his assistant head coach. And so before the game, the head coach has a room by himself, and then the assistants are in the other room. But always before, you know, before he would meet with the officials, he would always call me, said, "Mack, come on in here." And, you know, we'd go in there and discuss you know, the things that he was going to discuss with the officials. He already had all that laid out, you know, and so you just, you know, kind of what we did. And so I come in the room and I think I'm getting ready to get, you know, the officials talk and what he's going to talk to him about, or, you know, and he says, what do you think about this idea? And I go, well, now you got to understand, this is after we've come in from pregame warmup. Okay. So, I mean, you know, so we're, you know, I mean, he's had it, you know, I think it's about the fit, what he had gone on with the officials talk, because there were some things we were going to do in that game scheme wise. And so I thought he was going to tell me how the officials talk went. Well, he says, what do you think about this? I said, what are you talking about, Fish? He said, you know, all those guys we got from that RG3 trade, they're all traveling. I said, oh, I know. I said, yes. He said, how about if we send all of them out as captains? And I just tell the other captain, I just tell the other captains to stay over there with me on the bench. And I went, what? I went, Fish. Now, what? He said, no, here's what I'm thinking of doing. I just, what do you think about this? I said, you mean you're going to take those dudes that we got from that train here in Washington, and you're going to have each one of them introduced as a captain while your regular captains are standing there on the sideline? He said, oh, yeah, I think I like that. I went, you know what, Fish? Yeah, I love you. I said, I like that too. So he did it.
And who noticed it?
Oh, man, they all noticed it. Look, okay. I mean, look, they all noticed it because they introduced him. I'm up there in the box, and you can, I mean, come on, man. I mean, how did they not notice it? I mean, they got to, I mean, they know what, I mean, they're knowledgeable too. I mean, you know, they know what was going on, and we win the ball game. I mean, it's a, but it was, that was so classic Fish. I mean, and he didn't tell anybody. And as I said, I was, you know, one of his closest confidants, and I had no idea that he would even, I mean, who even thinks of that, you know?
Jeff Fisher.
With the joy in his eyes when he was telling me what he wanted to do, and he wasn't really asking me for affirmation. He was just, he could, it was inside him. He was about to bust out of him, so he had to tell somebody before he, hey, and when he told the team, when we brought him up, when they said 2-minute warning, when he told the team, he said, okay, here's what we're going to do. I mean, they started cheering like we'd already won the game. I mean, come on, guys.
Was it that similar to the reaction of the team when he told them in 2004, before we went to Indianapolis, that we were going to onside kick every time we scored?
We were a bad team, Mike.
Oh, we had no corners. We were down to like corners 7 and 8 at that
point. Yeah, I mean, we were pulling guys off the street that would have a hard time backpedaling at 7-Eleven. I mean, it was, I mean, really, I mean, we were just out of people. We were hurt. We were out of people. We went through some times there, you know, before we could build the thing back up, especially with the salary cap purge that we had because of, you know, all of the, everything that was done, you know, to be able to keep that Super Bowl team together. Well, you know, sooner or later, you know, the salary cap being what it was, and you didn't have the great increases that we have now. And so we got bumped up against it pretty bad. So we had to purge a lot of great players. That was painful. But anyway, so we've got no secondary left, and we're going up there to play. And of course, Peyton is rolling now. I mean, Peyton, you know, is throwing dimes every weekend that nobody can cover. And plus, you know, us, Jim Schwartz. I mean, we used to have a part of the playbook. We'd have our playbook for the year, and then we'd have an indie playbook, separate from the other playbook. It was an Indianapolis Colts playbook that Jim Schwartz had gathered all the information from all the years that he had been, you know, work going against Peyton Manning with Jeff Fisher of some of the things that we could do, because you had to have an entirely different game plan against Indianapolis and Peyton Manning than you did any other offense, because it was different. It was like in college when you played a lot of I formation teams, and all of a sudden in 1 week you've got to get ready for a wishbone team. So, in fact, we would practice some of the Peyton Manning stuff during training camp, because, you know, every now and then, you know, Keith Bullock was great, because he'd say, well, when's the Peyton Manning day, you know, during training camp? you know, because we would practice, because we had some different schemes that we'd have to run. And I mean, we had a series of armbands. We'd change armbands by quarters where we'd have to call them by numbers because, I mean, Peyton would dice you up. So anyway, we're going into this game and he knows going in, Fish does. So he talks to the staff meeting that we have on Monday night. He says, look, here's what I'm thinking of doing. He said, you know, no disrespect to anybody, but, you know, they might score 100. You know, we said, because Peyton, I mean, they're going to, you know, spin it up down the field. He said that, you know, that's when we had Billy Volek and he was still, you know, he could spin it too. But, you know, he said, and they weren't very good either on defense. Indy wasn't. He said, and they may not be able to stop us. He said, but we've got to maximize our possessions. He said, so I'm going to propose this to you now. And he had already talked with Alan Lowry and, you know, Alan's sitting there looking around and he said, anytime we score, we're going to onside kick. He said, does anybody have any objections? Or does anybody have any reason why we shouldn't? We just kind of sat there, you know, and Schwartz, you know, went, yeah, I'm for it. You know, I'm all for it, you know, steal a possession. He had already talked to Alan. So Alan had all of these onside kicks, different types of onside kicks set up, and we practiced. And he told the team on Wednesday. He told them, and they all went, yeah, hell yeah, hell yes, let's do it. So we get up there. I'll never forget it. You know how Peyton always used to go out with his receivers pregame, Mike? You watched it for years.
Oh, yeah, run the tree.
Watch them go through their tree and then watch them go down to the end zone and go, well, Peyton knew that we didn't have any DBs either. And Samari Roll was our lone dude, but he was hurt. And all week he didn't practice, and then you know, he was going to try to play, and it was going to be one of those workouts before. But I mean, Samari was hurt. I mean, he couldn't play, but he was our last dude. And I don't know if Peyton Manning would ever verify this or not, but Peyton was throwing his tree, and Samari Roll came out because we always used to watch it as defensive coaches. We would watch Peyton throw his tree just to watch it because we knew, you know. And I mean, he was precise and it was beautiful to watch from a technical aspect of it. And Samari come walking out to stand with us in his street clothes. Peyton and his receivers look over there and see Samari in street clothes. They said, throw a couple more, we're going in. That's it. Because these other dudes, they got no chance to stop us. All right. So we get into the ball game and here we go. And so we score, we onside kick, don't get it, and then we hold them. And then they score, we get it, we go down and score. Billy Volek throws a bomb. Mike, you remember all of this. We onside kick, get it, okay? We score again, we onside kick again. What was the score, Mike? What was the score at halftime of that ball game?
The score at the end of the first quarter was 24-17. At the end of the first quarter.
Yep. Yes, in whose favor?
Us.
Exactly.
We were ahead. So we were ahead 24-17. And Mickey, they're booing like crazy.
Oh.
They're turning around in the RCA Dome. But and I don't know. I mean, why are you booing? You know, I mean, it's like recover the onside kick. Get over it. You know.
Yeah.
And that was back when you could onside kick and scheme it up. You know.
Right.
And I mean, they were booing. You're right. They were booing so hard. We're cheering. Where everybody's feeling good. Now we know. I mean, it's like the little Dutch boy putting his finger in the holes of the dam. We know it's not going to last forever. Okay. But I mean, the guys are rolling with it. We are loving it. I mean, it is going so good. Now, the great part of it was then all of a sudden, then the Colts started putting out their hands team out there. Okay. All right. And in your hands team, you maybe use that once every 8 weeks, once every 9 weeks. Well, on their hands team up front, they have their best hands guys. And one of them on the end of the line of scrimmage was Reggie Wayne. Okay. And so Reggie's standing over there near our sideline. Okay. And of course, Fisher's talking to him. And this is about the fourth one we've tried. And he said, Reggie, you ready for this kick? And Reggie went, yeah. He looked over there, you know, smiling at him, you know, yeah. And Fish said, well, you better get ready to block because we're kicking this one deep.
Now you see why Reggie Wayne was popping off during the draft last year. He's still bitter about having to block on a kickoff.
He said, you better get ready to block these dudes coming down because we're kicking it deep.
Oh.
But the fellas loved it.
Oh, my God.
When they found out.
They ended up boat racing us. What was the final, Mike?
51-24.
That's about what it should have been. Yeah.
Well, at halftime, if we hadn't have done that, it might have. I mean, because the guys that we had played in the secondary, the 2004 team was the last team where we kept everybody together. Floyd Reese, you know, sort of manipulated the salary cap one more year, and we got everybody hurt. That's the most injuries we ever had in any season as the Titans. By the end of that year, man, we were decimated. We were playing people you'd never heard of and didn't hear of in 2005.
I'll tell you what, though, one of the best guys during crisis points during the season was Jeff Fisher.
Oh,
you know, we went 10-0 and ended up 13-3 that one year. And then, if you'll remember, the next year, we lost some really close games early. We start off 0-6. That's a death knell in the National Football League. 0-6. And we go to New England, and they hang half 100 on us up there in New England before the open date. That's the worst thing that could ever happen to you as a football team. I remember coming back on the plane. You know, Fish said, "Mac, we're going to do something different." I said, "Okay." And so he got back and talked to the players the next day, and it was our open date. Sent them home for the whole week. The whole week. Then he got the staff together and said, "Look, I want you to take everything down, you know, that we've done. We're going to go through and start looking at this, and we're going to recalibrate with the people that we have." And he said, "Steve Watterson, I want you to get some signs made up and put them on all the doors. And when they come back, the sign said, 'Welcome, Tennessee Titans,' on the opening day of your season." And we won 6 out of our next 8. You know, we won 8 out of our next 10. And we ended up 8-8, and we missed the playoffs by one game.
One game.
And so that was the resiliency of Jeff Fisher. And he was brilliant like that. He really was. But in times like that, I mean, Jeff Fisher was at his best.
This is the OTP, presented by Farm Bureau Health Plans. You can tell that the LLS Sports Stories event was mostly Coach Mack spinning yarns and Mickey Ryan and I laughing in the background. That was perfect. I did get to tell one Tennessee Titans story that actually predated Dave McGinnis joining the team. It was about another pregame move that Jeff Fisher made, and my friend, Titans Radio's Larry Stone, and I were both privy to it happening well before it went down. Most Titans fans don't know this story, so I'm going to share it right here on the OTP.
January 8th, 2000, first playoff game ever at Nissan Stadium. Titans, Bills, 16-15, Bills lead, 16 seconds to go, Music City Miracle happens. Kevin Dyson goes 75 yards, we kick the extra point, we win the game 22-16. You know what happened over the next 22 days. Over the next 22 days, we go to Indianapolis and win. We go to Jacksonville and beat them for the third time. We go to the Super Bowl 34, if not the most exciting Super Bowl ever, one of the top two or three, you know, just fantastic stuff. Parade, an off season that was just immeasurable, record numbers of season tickets sold. The NFL studies the Music City Miracle play. NFL Films does a couple of things with it, and they determine through some scientific looks at still photography and everything that Frank Wycheck's pass to Kevin Dyson did move backwards and was a lateral. It was legal. The ruling on the field was correct. The only place in the world they don't believe that is in Western New York. They fired their special teams coach afterwards. Wade Phillips is still not over it if you listen to him. And so the NFL has a sense of humor. The schedules are set, for the most part, years in advance based on rotations. There are a couple of spots where you play places based on where you finished in the division. And so that does happen. Well, it just so happened that the 2000 schedule the Tennessee Titans opened the 2000 season at Buffalo.
Of course.
So it's pretty obvious this is going to be a bloodletting. I mean, the Buffalo fans want it so badly that they can't even see straight. And they are foaming at the mouth to get the Tennessee Titans into Rich Stadium. And Jeff Fisher knows this, and he's prepared. And Buffalo has a great defensive team. They have tremendous talent. You know, they had been 11-5 the year before. Had it not been for a kickoff return, they would have advanced in the 1999 playoffs. And so they got a good club. And so Jeff Fisher knows we're walking in to the Hornets' nest. This is the worst it could possibly be. And I've been in a lot of stadiums in a lot of sports in my life, and I have never seen anything like what this atmosphere was. I mean, they didn't want to just win. They wanted to destroy us, put us away, stomp on us, and then come back and stomp on us some more. Jeff Fisher knew that was going to be the case. So on Fridays, Larry Stone from Titans Radio and I would have production meetings with Coach Fisher. And in the production meetings, we would go over a few things. He would make us aware of a few things that might happen. We would tape his pregame interview. And they were always very insightful. Coach Fisher would always have the same meal every week. He would have some tortilla chips, a certain number of meatballs. And he might have a little bit of chili. It was always the same thing. And he would always say the same things to us because Coach Fisher is very superstitious. We would leave it with, he would say, "I hope you win." And we would say back to him, "I hope you win too." It was always the same thing every single week. Well, in the course of this meeting, Coach Fisher tells us of a plan that we need to watch for in pregame. And as you know, in NFL games, the home team introduces either the starting offense or the starting defense. At that time, the visiting team would introduce either their starting offense or defense. Eventually, they just did away with that, and now the opposing team just comes running on the field.
Right.
So Coach Fisher says, hey, on Sunday night, and it's Sunday night football, back when it was on ESPN, Mike Patrick, Joe Theismann, and Paul McGuire. And so he says, we're not going to introduce offense and we're not going to introduce defense. We're going to introduce our special teams. And the last three guys that we're going to introduce are going to be Lorenzo Neal, Frank Wycheck, and Kevin Dyson. Larry Stone and I both look at each other. And I don't remember who said it, but we're like, Coach, you think that's a good idea? He goes, this was his response. Goes, oh, it'll be great. So we set up the whole pregame show. Oh. So we can be in commercial break while this happens because we all want to sit and watch it. Oh. And sure enough, here's Al Del Greco being introduced. Here's Terry Killens. Here's Perry Phoenix. At this point, they don't get it. Okay. They're just booing us because they hate our guts. We pull the Music City Miracle on them. It's just bad. And then they said, and number 41, Lorenzo Neal. But then they start to get it. The Buffalo crowd's like, oh, that's that guy. And about that time, it's like, and Frank Wycheck. Oh, I mean. And of course, our buddy Jeff Jarrett, who was wrestling for WCW at that point, had gone up the week the Monday after they were doing Monday Nitro after the Music City Miracle, and he had worn his Wycheck jersey in Buffalo on Monday night. So they see Wycheck and they start going just apoplectic. They are losing their minds. And then here's the nicest man in the world, Kevin Dyson. And I know that he throws his arms up in the air. And I mean, they're like pounding on our windows. I mean, I'm thinking we're not getting out of here. Somebody, I mean, we are not. I mean, it's like Oakland only times 10 because they are just absolutely raging. It's the worst scene I've ever seen in terms of fan reaction.
Oh.
And the best scene I've ever seen. And I looked down at Fisher. He has to turn away because he has so gotten them. But, you know, and we lost the game that night. Should have won the game. Lost the game that night. Blew it. Team ended up going 13-3. And Buffalo, you know, until last year, they really hadn't been the same since. But the thing Fisher did, and this was the part that was always so great about Fisher, is that crowd blew themselves out at that moment. Yes. They were never a factor in the game. We didn't lose because of the crowd. They used up all of their energy right at the start when they saw Kevin Dyson, and at that part, they were just like – Well, they saw it, and I think there were these two things. There's the Music City Miracle flashback, and then there's also this disbelief, can they really be doing this? I mean, speaking of wrestling moves, this is the greatest heel pop I've ever seen in my entire – that's the greatest heel move ever. And only Fisher would have had the sense of humor to do it, but he also had something behind it. He knew, let's get it all out of the way. And
so great. So great.
So great. The funny thing is, I don't know if Vrabel will ever do anything like that, but he's got some of that in him, you know?
Yeah, you think?
Yeah, he's got some of that sense of humor. I mean, let's face it. I mean, you need to use it all while we're here, right? I mean, have some fun.
You already saw Mike Vrabel do the whole penalty punt against Bill Belichick.
Belichick.
They got the rule changed. Yeah, he's got some of that in him.
Yeah, I mean, where he Belichicked Belichick. I mean, it was – and the look on his face. I picked up Rhett Bryan's binoculars because I just wanted to see what he was doing.
Oh, so good.
That was about half of the night of sports stories that Coach Dave McGinnis and I teamed up to do for the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society. If you'd like to help them by making a donation, it would be much appreciated. Go to bit.ly/LLS livestream. That's bit.ly/LLS livestream. Thank you to Mickey Ryan, Christina Ryan, and all of the folks at LLS, and Amy Wells for allowing me to share some of this event with you. Most of all, thanks to Dave McGinnis for his friendship, his partnership, and his willingness to always help. Coach Mack is from Texas, and as you can tell, he's got a heart as big as all of Texas. Also, thanks to our sponsor, Farm Bureau Health Plans. Don't get sacked by the high cost of healthcare. Make Farm Bureau Health Plans your first line of protection. They've been protecting Tennesseans since 1947. I'm Mike Keith, thanking you for joining us for the OTP.